IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 81 of the Killing It Podcast. I'm Carl, joined today, as always, by Ryan and Dave. So Ryan just took his tie off. What's up with that?
Man, I was wearing a tie and a jacket today. And what I have fully embraced is this new working world. Sometimes you actually do still need to look like a grown-up when you're on camera. Some meetings are very casual among friends and peers and colleagues. Other times you actually have to look impressive. So I will admit, though, I completely am not good at it anymore. But I used to be able to tie a tie in my sleep. Now it takes me some time. And
I have such respect for you and your tie. You've embraced it. I've had a rule for over a decade that you either have to be getting married or be dead for me to wear a tie. Like, it's just like, it just, and I haven't worn, I barely wear a button. The only time I wear button down shirts practically is when I'm out taking Sharon out for dinner or something like that. Like, if these days, admittedly, I will throw on a jacket. Like, you probably see it from my editorial videos. Like, I'll throw on a jacket, but there's always a geek tee or something underneath that. I respect that you're still doing it, but I can't anymore. I'm so over it.
So I have a different approach to this, which is I'm now celebrating this month my 20th anniversary of rheumatoid arthritis. So I don't wear a tie because I don't want to. I'm like, I get to say, you know, hey, you know, my hands hurt. I'm not tying any ties today.
I like that. That is a legit reason. You can actually back that up. Me, it's just me being like a baby.
Well, then I got the birthdays going on. So, you know, I also get to say, and I'm an old man, so I don't have to do anything I don't want to do.
Well, and the other side that I have learned, I can do the jacket. I can get back into the tie here. My feet are not friendly with dress shoes anymore. I think that in the last 6 months of either being barefoot or wearing sandals or something, because why? Nobody's looking at my feet when we're in the remote office. I put on a pair of dress shoes the other day, and in about an hour, it felt like somebody had whacked my foot with a hammer. And I was like, okay, it's going to be a long cold season before I put on dress shoes.
See, I think I have to laugh. I think I may have to go dust those shoes. Like, it's been that long. I think it may be a problem.
All righty. Well, we do have a sponsor this week. As always, we love our sponsor. I don't think we have any new awards. Like, we didn't make any new lists this week, but we are a very popular podcast. So share us with your friends and neighbors. But now we have a sponsor.
The MSP Event of the Year is back. This time, it's virtual and free to attend. SureWeb's Accelerate 2020 offers a comprehensive online program to help you gear up for the future of managed services. Industry experts will deliver thought leadership sessions and hands-on workshops on sales, marketing, financials, strategic business planning, and customer engagement. Also available will be one-on-one meetings and fun virtual networking. Want to stay relevant in a disrupted world? Join us from anywhere on October 21st and 22nd. Registration is open at accelerate.sureweb.com.
Excellent. As always, we do love our sponsors, and we appreciate how you help us continue to expand the audience. Each of the listeners, when you hear something on here that's interesting, tell us that you think that's interesting, but also tell your friends, right? Like, I think that this is a very organic conversation that's going on. And that leads us very gracefully into the first topic that we wanted to discuss today. So over the last 6 months, every one of us has adapted to the new weird world. We've worked from home. We're doing remote things. We were talking in the run-up to the show here today. We have learned new skills of video production and remote networking and collaborating. We didn't even know we needed to have these skills, and yet now we just had to adapt. The topic that we want to discuss, though, is, can we do this in a more professional way? Us, our businesses, our clients need not just a webcam and a remote connection, but a business process with reliability and scalability where we can do our work from anywhere. And the distinction, this is something that I've been spending a lot of time on, because, by the way, there's a tremendous amount of technology sales opportunity around this topic. But the way it started to crystallize that I think is very important is the difference between working remotely and having a distributed workforce organization. Working remotely means me individually, I can do whatever I want to do from wherever I want to do it. Distributed workforce means we as an organization can do our jobs, serve our customers, engage with our suppliers, irrespective of location, distance, or physical proximity. Now, that more mature version of the topic, that more professional version, I think it's the way of the future. We can argue all we want about, will we ever go back to the office? Will everybody ever go back to the office? And of course, the answer is no.
But I think right. There's no argument.
What we can all fundamentally admit is way more people will continue to work remotely than ever before. But are they being professional when they do it? And what can we as a community of solution providers and technology professionals do to empower them?
Well, it was interesting because I covered a story on Business with Tech that we've included the link to on this show notes. It was about Twitter. And like I'm bash on Twitter for lots of other reasons and all other things. So let's at least admit that. But what I was really interested in, it's kind of a long read article, but it tells the story of their investment in actually hiring people to manage that transformation pre-COVID. Like they had done it a bit because Jack Dorsey sent out an email, was kind of the story. But they ended up looking at the ways they were going to look at specifically investing in collaboration, having policies, having the forethought on the way they would change things and the way their business done. I look at this and I say, there's still this massive opportunity post the transition to work from home. Because I think just a bunch of people threw themselves into work remote working and didn't actually take on any of the hard bits about thinking about culture, thinking about policies, thinking about the way you manage, the way you run your teams. I don't think anybody did any of that. And I'm seeing it even just from the perspective of talking to people who haven't taken enough vacation or haven't like, or feeling the stress of living their lives on a camera. Like, I don't think people did the rest of the work. And I look at that and say, yeah, anytime I say you didn't do the work, that screams opportunity, like sell stuff here.
There's so many angles to this because many of us, all three of us included, but many, many people we work with have been doing the roadshow thing for a long, long time. We're used to Zoom, we're used to Teams, we're used to WebEx, we're used to, we travel with microphones, we travel with cameras, we have done a lot of this stuff, but we've also, from another angle, upped our game because suddenly everybody else is doing some similar stuff. We actually can teach them how to do this, take their game to the next level. And again, different angle, in response to all that, the tools available are getting better and better and better. So it's one of those things where once it reaches critical mass, it takes off. I'm starting a new training on how to do sales remotely because some of it's exactly the same, but you know what? Once you have the tools in front of you, you can do things. You can pop up stuff in front of somebody's face that you just can't do in a conference room. So the world keeps evolving and there's a whole lot of people that are kind of in the club that some of us have been in for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years.
See, and it's not a United club, by the way.
No, it is. We wish it was, but it is not. But see, and I will hark back to one of the topics from our last episode. We talked about the idea of technology transparency. What we're striving for is to arrive at a point where we just do things and we don't have to pay attention to the tools in between us and that outcome. You just use it, right? I think that's the objective that we ought to be aiming for in remote work. We should not have to make a comment. Hey, I'm just working from home, guys. Sorry about the noise in the background. Hey, guys, sorry about the audio quality. I'm in my bathroom or in the garage or whatever. Like, we should get to a point where it doesn't matter so much that no one even notices where we are or whether we are in an office or remote. We are a million miles from that right now. And in the show notes, we've included some links to a couple of white papers, a couple of frameworks. I've been doing just a mountain of research around this idea, and there are some fantastic resources out there. Dig in, read some of these things. There's one called a remote work competency model. It's an entire philosophical way of evaluating humans and determining whether or not that person is qualified and capable of doing that job remotely. This is not just selling somebody a laptop and a webcam. There's consulting, professional services.
And that's the key point to take away is we're not talking about like the basics of like, I'm going to set you up and you can like have the technology. It's about the business process and the management of it that I'm excited about. And I look and say, there's so much work left to be done for so many companies. So for me, that's the big bit, but we're out of time on this one. So I'm going to pivot us to something of a related topic, because I was struck by, and I freely admit that this was one of those, oh, this is a placed paid piece of content, I must be slightly skeptical. But it was a really well done piece by the folks at Huawei, actually, which was around the idea of moving past mobile, why innovation needs to happen beyond smartphones. And for me, this was a real kind of moment of thinking of, yeah, you know, I've been really struggling with the idea of, are we getting enough innovation? Am I seeing enough innovation? Like, where is it next going to come from? And this channeled a little bit of my thinking, and I wanted to throw this to you guys, was they tout a lot of the idea of connected living and connected future. And what I was, and they even dove into the seamless workplace. What was striking to me was they were alluding to things that I felt like I'd been saying for a while and still haven't seen. The idea of being able to move from place to place and my digital self moves with it, and I'm able to interact with things in new ways. My best analogy remains the Star Trek Enterprise with the computer. The ability to talk to the computer anywhere without having to name it necessarily, like identify who I am, give it context, yet it still responds to me. The idea of having the smartphone be holding us back or part of that piece. And I wanted to throw to you guys, like, where do you think we're held back, or what the next vision of this looks like for each of you?
Well, I would say one of the most interesting things for me when I saw this article was that I like the message. I'm nervous about the messenger, right? You mentioned like, this is a Huawei thing, right? And their vision is that everything is connected all the time. And the reality is, potentially it all goes through China, right? So it's like, he mentions all these examples of like every little device in your house, in your bedroom, right? There's a certain level of it that I want the dream. I'm not sure.
I want a version of that. I may not want. Yeah, I want a version of it. Maybe not their version of it. Right. But I want
I want my private data to go through a major corporation in the United States that doesn't care about my privacy.
See, but I think that is, to your point, Dave, that is the obstacle. What prevents us from living this connected life that they describe is identity, privacy, and access to my information, right? I was, again, in our back channel conversations, I was marveling at how long I lived in this world without having an online cloud accessible backup resource. I have my laptop and I go all around the world and I've got a backup, but my backup's back at home. And it took me a surprisingly long time to get to a point where I was like, wait, I don't have to make sure I've got the latest version of this file. It goes with me everywhere I am. But if my data goes everywhere that I am, now I'm hyper sensitive to the question of privacy and data security and protection. And then if you take that through to the only way you can get through those layers of security in a remote location is to have the machine already recognize your identity. Well, now you're getting infinitely interpersonal with me, right? Like now the machine and the cloud starts to sound more like Minority Report than it does like just a cell phone and a network. that can be used for good or it can be used for evil. I think if we can figure out ubiquitous deployment of where your data is inside a privacy shell so that I'm not freaked out that, you know, when I logged onto a computer inside that United Club in an airport somewhere, other people might see the remnants of my data, but then that identity has to be protected outside of that.
It's so funny that nobody has stepped in to solve the identity problem, like at scale. And here's where, like, I'm going to kind of laugh and go, I found some old notes of my own from like a decade ago where I had this idea where what if Facebook was like, had sold identity? Like, I could see where they had all of the, and again, 10 years ago, not recently, but you think back like to when they started out, like they had a lot of the pieces of verified identity, right? Like a single identity, they were going for a single login when they started launching Login with Facebook. Like, I could actually see the idea of them being like the Active Directory of the cloud or of your personal life. I could even see like Microsoft or maybe Apple, like if they could come up with this idea of like a registered identity piece and link it to it, but it has such privacy implications that 10 years ago I was comfortable with this conversation. Now I'm just freaking out because they're all like, I don't trust any of you people. Oh, and by the way, just this week the government said I don't trust any of you people either.
So, well, so a couple of thoughts. One is, you know, along those lines, when you're given the options, you know, that like, oh, here's a brand new service I want to sign up for. Log in with Google, log in with Facebook, log in with Apple, or create your own, you know, ID. I never choose Facebook, ever. Because to me, my vision of logging in with Google is I'm going to get a thing on my authenticator, right? And it's going to have two-factor automatically built in. My vision of Facebook is I'm going to have one more thing that gets into my data and spreads it across the world. So
I hang my head in shame. I use Login with Facebook, although I've been trying to move to Login with Apple, but I hang my head in shame.
Well,
I just want to bring up the other totally different perspective is this is one of these things where we are just like right next to the next version of reality. And if Huawei is pushing this and Facebook is pushing this and you know, Minority Report is 20 years old, right? And Dave's vision of this is 10 years old. It's like, okay, it's about to happen. Somebody or somebodies are just, this is going to come into existence as if it had always been there.
And to put a very fine point on that, you guys remember a month or so ago, we discussed emerging technologies around the cloud. There's a hype cycle and a life cycle of things that are coming to market. And one of them, and Carl pointed this one out, that is especially interesting and dynamic is the human digital twin. Right. We've talked at length before. I am fascinated from a mechanical or an industrial point of view, the concept of the digital twin and how all of our devices are replicated in the digital universe and you can track them in real time. Well, that concept is coming for humans. And we need to figure out pretty quickly whether or not we're comfortable with that, because this is not a concept. These are products that are already in development. And that universal identity could go with you everywhere.
And somebody could solve this really smartly. Either you could do it centralized, right? Or you could do it like, you know, blockchain, I guess-ish. Like you can envision a distributed version of this that's public and open that still has a monetization layer to it. Like somebody needs to take this on, because I see so many ways where a verified identity would make a huge difference. Imagine social media with a verified identity. Imagine, you know, like data protection with a verified identity. Imagine, like, and if it was an actually true cryptographic piece and maybe secured with physical keys, like, but I can see this playing out and I don't know where the players are. I mean, listeners, if you've got one for me, please, I want to hear about it. Because
the freaky thing is that, like, if you think about, okay, well, hey, I would put my DNA in this system and then, you know, somehow, but even that just boils down to a very large encrypted number, right? So But I, you know, the two-factor, three-factor authentication, I think we could get there.
We could get there. We have the pieces.
We're that close.
Well, we have the pieces, but more importantly, we have the need. Like, there is, we've identified that we do need this thing. And I think it unlocks all kinds of other potential. I mean, as I said, like, imagine a social media network where you actually know who you're talking to. I also think that we're going to see some disruption in these business models because there's a lot of people that are ready to pay to make the garbage go away. You know, like, I'd pay to have a non- like ad monetized version of Facebook. Like, I give them money that is not show me the garbage and let me actually see the people.
Right. Somebody's listening.
Yeah. Good luck with that. But, I mean, the final point on that topic though, if you take that away, right? Our first topic was distributed workforce. Wouldn't it be cool if those distributed people didn't have to take stuff with them because it was just all connected everywhere they went? Hey, that sounds like a beautiful future.
All right. Well, maybe next week we'll put a timeline on this. Herbie. All right. So topic number three, we return to our sometimes topic of life after COVID. This is an interesting one that Ryan pointed us to, which is post-COVID, CIOs are looking at a very changing world. Well, I got to tell you, first of all, when you talk about CIOs with actual budgets, it's always been a guessing game, right? And so they literally a year ago are looking at 2020 as a year of decreasing budgets, and suddenly they're getting more money for remote work.
Funny how that happens.
Yeah. At the same time, people say, okay, so now we need you to reduce your costs across the board, but we have these additional requirements. So I hope I never am reincarnated as a CIO of a large company with a budget.
Well, see, I love CIO articles. I freely admit it because, look, if you spend all your time pitching yourself as the trusted advisor or the virtual CIO, well, duh, you ought to be reading the CIO stuff to understand what issues CIOs are thinking about. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not a direct one-to-one of like everything that they're doing, I must do in my smaller business. But if you're pitching that you're thinking that way, you actually have to do the homework.
Like, well, especially if your clients are bigger than you, right? If you've got a 20-person company, but you're really giving advice to companies with big, big budgets, you want to be their CIO, you do have to speculate.
Well, but even moderate size budgets, like, you have to be doing that.
Well, but that speaks to what this article is actually pointing out. And again, fascinating read about who these folks are and what they've been struggling with and what they are being asked to accomplish going forward. The best piece of advice I ever heard in the history of my career was, if it's already obvious, that means somebody else got paid to figure it out. Where there is mystery, there is margin, right? You make a profit where things are confusing. And what this article is pointing out, and I think every single one of us, we feel this in our industry right now. We had a plan coming into 2020. The world fell apart and we all, in a heroic, fascinating way, adapted at light speed to be able to work remotely. And now we're coming back. And literally somebody yesterday asked me the question, so what does 2021 look like? And my answer was, it depends. And he said, stop saying that to me because that's very, very frustrating. And my point was, no, it depends. Does the organization have a plan? Have they adapted quickly enough? Are they still trying to survive? And generally speaking, what we are hearing is nobody has figured out 2021, much less 22, 23. Like, these long-term plans that were in place as of March 2020, they are all now in the dustbin and we need to start from scratch. You know what that sounds like to me? A managed service provider needs to stop just calling themselves a virtual CIO and they need to define their perspective. Don't just get paid to give people advice on products and technology. Think future vision, think business strategy as it's informed by technology.
There is value in I told you so, right? I mean, it's at some point, if you say, look, we have been talking to you about security and we've been talking to you about remote work. We've been talking to you about training up your workforce. And now suddenly in an instant, everybody's got to go home and you haven't given us a budget.
Okay. So if you say there's value and I told you so, I'm totally cashing that in right now, because six years ago, Ryan and I stood on a stage and talked about agile development and building quarterly plans with like a directional idea to the next 12, rather than trying to build annual plans. Well, here we are 6 years later, and we look like freaking geniuses because I told you so. Because if you're running your business in a way where you plan quarterly with a directional, you know, thinking for the 12 months beyond, well, you're super agile. You're just figuring out what I'm going to get done this quarter, or my actual plan is this quarter, and I'm going to go that away for the rest. And you look like a genius.
I can tell you. So way back when, 25 years ago, 1995, I was working at HP, and I was in charge of their remote access program for the Roseville plant. And I can tell you, they had a three-year plan of how all the software in the world was going to evolve and get moved into their system. And that didn't work for me because
it was wrong.
They wanted to be on Windows 95. And I'm like, no, 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 you are moving to NT now. And right, either that or you have to quadruple the budget for remote access, like pick one. And they were like, nope, there is literally an intergalactic plan at HP of how we do things. I'm like, okay. So then it's like, oh, how do we get an exception to the rule, right? So big corporations, they have three-year plans and five-year plans, knowing for a fact that you go beyond 6 months and it all gets really fuzzy.
Right.
Yeah. So the smaller everything you are, actually, the easier it is for you to be agile.
Absolutely. And I mean, if any of us have learned anything in the last 6 months, it is that having the best strategy is not the competitive advantage. Having the ability to sense and respond more rapidly, more accurately to changing scenarios in your business context, that is the killer skill. And that is the definition of agile in business. I think that might be the most universally sellable, lucrative business opportunity for a solution provider in 2021, right? Your customers know that their old plans don't work. They know that they do not want to do what they just did for the last 6 months again, because we all get real old real quick when we have to live in real time like that. They're looking for direction. This is a coachable, teachable audience, and they are willing to pay for your professional advice, but not if the extent of your professional advice is, you should sign up for my entire package of backup and recovery and all this. Now, you got to have a vision, to Dave's point, of what the CIO needs to know and lead them in that.
Right. Direction. And here's the funny thing is everything we just said is completely not a new idea. In fact, like I was laughing, going like same garbage we've been saying for 6 years. The only thing that I will tell you is like everything else right now, it's been supercharged. It's been accelerated faster. We were already accelerating, and then pandemic hits, and it's like, here we go. We're on the true accelerated roller coaster ride. If it was true before, it is now triply true now, because we are moving so much faster, and that timeline is a lot less defined. And so
I think that we should do a seminar on how to look into the future.
Sweet.
I throw stuff at the wall.
there are multiple methodologies that you can use.
And then if it sticks 6 years later, I look back and say, I told you so.
See, I told you so. Like, I mean, look, I'm the one on this piece that said 6 years ago I was completely right on Agile. But 10 years ago, I thought Facebook was going to be the bastion of identity. So
live and learn.
They're not all great predictions.
All right. So once again, we've wasted 30 minutes not solving all the problems in the world. Thanks for tuning in. This has been episode 81 of the Killing It,
Killing It
podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.